Imagine selling your house today, loading up a moving truck, driving just 90 minutes up the interstate, and tomorrow you wake up with a completely paid off mortgage.
And maybe even a vacation cabin on a nearby lake.
Great. A vacation cabin plus, I don't know, $250,000 in cash just sitting in your bank account.
It sounds totally fabricated, honestly.
It really does, but for a very specific subset of people living in Seattle and King County right now, that isn't some, lottery fantasy. It's a highly strategic geographic loophole.
Yeah, it's the ultimate arbitrage. You're essentially trading this major, globally connected metropolitan pressure cooker for a coastal, small city lifestyle.
Exactly.
And the crazy part is, you're doing it without ever leaving your home state's infrastructure.
And that is exactly what we are tearing into today. So, welcome to the deep dive. If you're sitting in Seattle or King County right now and you've ever found yourself stuck in absolutely gridlocked I-5 traffic,
Oh, the Mercer mess.
the Mercer mess, exactly. Or maybe you just opened your latest King County property tax bill, stared blankly at the ceiling, and thought, what if we just moved 90 minutes north?
I think everyone up here has had that exact thought at least once.
Right. Well, this conversation is built specifically for you. We are absolutely not doing general Pacific Northwest fluff today. We aren't doing broad comparisons of random counties across the country.
No, we're getting highly specific.
Highly specific. We are looking at the raw, unfiltered, deeply pragmatic reality of leaving the Seattle Metro for Bellingham.
Which, I should add, requires its own unique set of calculations. People think that because it's only an hour and a half away, it's just, well, they think it's just a neighborhood change.
Yeah, like moving from Ballard to West Seattle or something.
Exactly. But culturally, financially, logistically, it is a massive structural shift in how you live your daily life.
Totally. So, to understand the mechanics of this move, we are relying on a singular, incredibly detailed source today.
It's a great guide.
It really is. It's the Seattle to Bellingham Complete Relocation Guide, freshly updated for 2026. This was written by Gennaro Schaffer of Bellwether Real Estate.
And he's a Washington real estate broker with over 11 years of experience handling this exact specific migration pattern.
Yeah, he has watched this Seattle to Bellingham pipeline play out dozens and dozens of times. So today, we are going to trace the money. We'll look at how an hour and a half drive unlocks hundreds of thousands in equity and completely rewrites your tax burden.
We also need to talk about the commute.
Oh, we're going to confront the brutal, hubristic delusion of the super commuter, trust me. And we'll dive into the psychological realities of trading a massive tech hub for a quiet college town.
Because looking at Schaefer's guide, the overarching theme that jumps out immediately is this wild dichotomy.
It is wild. Administratively, this is the easiest physical relocation you can possibly make. But psychologically.
It's a completely different universe.
Exactly.
I mean, the administrative ease is really what baits the hook for a lot of Seattleites.
Yeah.
It's the same state, the same foundational rules, the same driver's license.
You don't even have to change your vehicle registration, right?
Nope. Even the real estate listing system, the NWMLS, is exactly the same. You don't feel like you're crossing a massive boundary.
But then you look at the numbers.
Right. The moment you start looking at the financial spreadsheet, the scale of the change becomes undeniable.
I'm so glad you brought up the spreadsheet because every major life decision, especially one involving real estate, usually starts with the numbers. Let's look at the massive price arbitrage between these two cities.
It's pretty stark.
Schaefer lays out the thumbsecond math right at the beginning of the 2026 guide. The Seattle median home price is hovering around, what, $900,000 right now?
Yeah, right around there.
And the Bellingham median, it's sitting at about $650,000 to $700,000.
Wow.
I mean, that is a 25 to 35% reduction in your core housing costs just by driving a podcast and a half north.
Which is a staggering differential. For two cities in the exact same state, sitting on the exact same body of water, sharing the exact same macroeconomic climate.
Yeah.
You aren't moving to the rural Midwest to get that discount. You're staying right in the I-5 corridor of Western Washington.
Okay, let's really unpack this
Yeah.
because reading through the guide, Shaver describes this move for Seattleites as a one-time equity unlock. And I have to admit, when I first read that phrase, my initial reaction was pretty skeptical.
Sure, it sounds a bit gimmicky.
Right. It sounds almost like a financial cheat code. Like you just press up, up, down, down, left, right on your life, and suddenly you're rich. I mean, does selling a Seattle home genuinely fund a whole new lifestyle, or is that just incredibly clever broker marketing designed to get you to list your house?
It's an entirely fair thing to question, because equity unlock has totally become a bit of an industry buzzword. But the answer lies in the micro breakdown of where exactly in King County you're moving from. Schaffer's data is very granular here, and he's honest about the fact that this isn't a magical cheat code for absolutely everyone.
Okay, so who does it work for?
Well, it depends entirely on your origin point. Let's look at the absolute top tier, Bellevue and the premium east side. Sellers in those markets are sitting on homes currently valued anywhere between $1 million and well over $2 million.
Easily, yeah.
When those families sell, even after taking out the roughly 6% in standard selling costs and broker fees, they're walking away with $940,000 to nearly $1.9 million in pure net cash.
Okay, and they take that massive war chest and they buy into a Bellingham market where a highly comparable, beautiful mid-tier home is $650,000 to $700,000.
Right, so even if you add $10,000 in closing costs, their purchase price is maybe $710,000.
So wait, run that math for me.
Well, those Eastside sellers typically have a massive amount of cash left over. We're talking anywhere from $200,000 to a full $1 million in raw unlocked equity.
$1 million cash.
Yes. It stops being a standard real estate transaction and instantly turns into a major wealth management strategy.
That is literal life-changing money. But obviously, not every listener is sitting on a $2 million tech mansion in Bellevue.
True.
How does this scale down depending on the neighborhood? Because a move from Ballard has to look very different than a move from Medina.
It scales significantly, but the advantages remain for a large swath of the city. If we look at Seattle proper, the more classic urban neighborhoods where single-family homes are generally in the $700,000 to $1.2 million range, those sellers are still netting a very comfortable $100,000 to $300,000 left over after buying that $710,000 single-family home in Bellingham.
So it's still a massive financial windfall. You sell a house in Queen Anne, buy a comparable house in Bellingham, and you still have $250,000 left over.
Exactly.
But what about the folks further south, or people who are currently in smaller units like condos? The guide is pretty clear that this isn't a gold rush for every single zip code, right?
Yeah, and this is where Schaffer's honesty in the guide is critical. For certain demographics, the math shifts from a windfall to more of a lateral move. Yeah. If you are selling down south in Burien, Tequila, or SeaTac, where single-family homes are typically in the $500,000 to $700,000 range, you're generally just breaking even.
Oh, I see.
Your net cash from the sale in South King County is going to very closely match your purchase price in Bellingham. You aren't unlocking $250,000 in cash, but you are trading a congested airport-adjacent suburban grid for a coastal mountain town.
That makes sense. And if you're in a condo, say Capitol Hill.
If you're selling a condo in Capitol Hill or Belltown, those are typically in the $400,000 to $800,000 range. You will usually have to actually add cash or take on a slightly larger mortgage to make the jump to a detached single-family Bellingham home.
Really?
Yeah. The only way condo owners unlock equity is if they aggressively downsize into another smaller condo in Bellingham, which most people relocating out of the city aren't looking to do. They usually want the yard and the space.
Right. If you're leaving the city, you want a yard. Okay, so it really is a deeply neighborhood-by-neighborhood reality. But for the people who do fall into those top two tiers, the folks who do unlock that $100,000 to $1 million, what does that actually do for them mechanically?
It's fascinating to look at.
Because as you mentioned earlier, this isn't just about scoring a slightly cheaper monthly mortgage payment. That's thinking too small.
Way too small.
Mm-hmm.
If we look at how Schaffer details his clients' post-move behavior, it's about executing a structural life shift. The way these transplants deploy this windfall is honestly incredible.
What do they do with it?
Well, for some, it means buying that Bellingham home entirely in cash.
Entirely in cash. So zero mortgage.
Absolute zero mortgage. Yeah. Think about the psychological weight of that. They take what used to be a massive, anxiety-inducing monthly Seattle housing payment, maybe $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a month, and funnel it directly into retirement accounts or college funds.
Wow.
They instantly de-risk their lives.
That is wild. And the guide mentions that some people don't just stop at one house, right? They use the equity to build an immediate real estate portfolio.
Yes. And this is highly specific to the geography of Whatcom County. Some transplants will use the cash to put a massive 50% down payment on their primary Bellingham home, securing a tiny mortgage. And then they use the remaining cash to buy a second property right away.
A second property right off the bat.
Exactly. They'll buy a vacation rental up in Birch Bay, which is a popular coastal spot just 30 minutes north, or they'll buy a recreational cabin out on Lake Whatcom.
So you sell one house in Bellevue, And suddenly you own two properties in Whatcom County outright, or very close to it.
Pretty much.
You become a homeowner and an investor overnight simply by driving 90 miles. That is, I mean, I can see why people do this.
Or for the slightly older demographic people in their late 50s or early 60s, this equity serves as an early retirement bridge.
Ah, right.
They take that $300,000 in unlocked equity. They finally quit the high-pressure, 60-hour-a-week Seattle corporate job 5 years earlier than they ever thought possible. And they use that cash buffer to sustain their lifestyle until their pensions or 401ks officially kick in without penalty.
It buys time.
It buys time.
Yeah.
It buys options. It's not just housing arbitrage, it's lifestyle arbitrage.
I really want you, the listener, to pause for a second and mentally calculate your own neighborhood tier right now. If you are sitting in a home in Ballard or Kirkland or Redmond and you look at this math, what would an extra $200,000 in the bank, or suddenly not having a mortgage payment at all, change about your daily stress level?
It'd be huge for most people.
Huge. How would it change your relationship with your job? It's a profound question to wrestle with, because at that scale, this is not just a real estate transaction. You are quite literally trading geography for financial freedom.
And that concept of financial freedom leads us perfectly into the second major consideration of this deep dive, because making the move, the transaction itself, is only half the financial equation.
Right. Keeping the home and living your daily life in the new city brings us to the ongoing costs, the taxes.
Oh, the taxes. And I have to say, looking through the source material, this is the section where I was genuinely confused at first. I actually had to read it twice.
Why is that?
Because I'm sitting here thinking, wait a minute. Washington is famously a 0% income tax state. We
Yeah.
have no state income tax in Seattle, and we have no state income tax in Bellingham. The state is the state.
Exactly.
Furthermore, the source explicitly says that the base state property tax structure is identical, effectively hovering around 0.9% of assessed value. And when you sell your Seattle house, you pay the exact same Washington real estate excise tax, the REIT, that you would anywhere else in the state.
Right.
So I found myself asking, isn't the tax picture entirely identical? Why is Schefer dedicating an entire section to this? What is the catch? Because cities usually don't just let you keep a massive financial windfall without finding some way to tax your daily life. It's a brilliant question, and it highlights why localized knowledge is so crucial here. The catch is what Schefer calls the Seattle wrinkle.
The Seattle wrinkle.
Yeah, yes, the statewide foundational taxes, the income tax ban, the base property tax are identical. But Seattle and King County have systematically layered on localized levies and special assessments over the past 2 decades that Whatcom County simply does not have.
Ah,
It
okay.
creates a completely different, much heavier, localized tax burden.
So it's not a different tax system, it's just a mountain of add-ons. It reminds me of looking at a cable bill or a cell phone bill.
That's a great way to put it.
Like, the base package is $50, but then you have the regional sports fee, the broadcast fee, the local infrastructure fee, and suddenly your bill is $90. What kind of layers are we talking about in King County?
That analogy is incredibly accurate. It's a cumulative stacking effect. First, you have the Seattle Public Schools levies, which are substantial because of the sheer size of the district.
Right, massive district.
Then you add in the King County Libraries levy. On top of that, you have the massive Sound Transit regional assessment. This is the heavy tax burden, paying for the multi-decade region-wide light rail expansion across the Seattle metro area.
Oh, yeah. The car tab shock and the property tax hits for Sound Transit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you have various Seattle-specific park, open space, and affordable housing levies that voters have consistently approved.
Right. The voters keep passing them, which is fine, but they stack up. So even if the base rate is roughly 0.9% across the state, these King County add-ons keep piling higher and higher on your final bill.
Precisely. And Schefer calculates the real-world impact of this stacking. He points out that the bottom-line net property tax dollar amount, if you compare an equivalent $800,000 home in Seattle to an equivalent $800,000 home in Bellingham, is typically 5 to 15% higher in Seattle.
Wait, 5 to 15% higher on the exact same home value?
Yes. That is a permanent, structural, year-over-year carrying cost that you eliminate simply by crossing the county line into Whatcom. And that is just the property tax side of the ledger. You also have to look at the daily friction of the sales tax.
The guide does dive in to sales tax, which I found really interesting. Seattle's sales tax is currently sitting around 10.25%. Bellingham sales tax is down around 8.7%.
Yeah.
And On paper, a percent and a half difference sounds almost trivial. It sounds like a rounding error. But when you think about outfitting a new life, if you're buying a car up there, or purchasing $10,000 worth of new appliances for the new Bellingham house, or just looking at your annual family grocery and retail spending over the course of a decade, that 1.5% delta absolutely compounds.
It definitely compounds.
Yeah.
But if we want to talk about the most significant and arguably the most complex tax wrinkle in this entire relocation guide, we have to talk about the Seattle Jumpstart Payroll Tax.
Yes. The jumpstart tax. Now, as someone living in the Seattle area, I'm very familiar with the baseline here. For the listener who might not know the intricate details, the jumpstart tax is an employer-side tax levied by the city of Seattle. It targets large businesses. Currently, it ranges from 0.7 to 2.4% on the payroll for employees who earn above $174,000 threshold. So it was designed to tax the massive tech giants, the Amazons, the Googles, the Facebooks, based on their highly compensated employees located in the city.
Correct.
But what I don't understand is how this employer-side tax actually factors into an individual employee's decision to move to Bellingham. I don't pay the jumpstart tax out of my paycheck. My company pays it, so why do I care?
You care because of the corporate psychology of remote work.
Okay, tell me more.
The key to the jumpstart tax is that it applies specifically to Seattle-located jobs. Schaefer points out an incredible dynamic happening right now. For highly compensated remote workers, software engineers, biotech researchers, senior managers moving out of Seattle proper and relocating their home office to Bellingham actually shifts this burden.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Depending on the employer's specific remote work policies and how they legally classify the employee's location, moving out of King County could mean the employer is no longer liable for that Seattle jumpstart tax on that specific salary.
Oh, wow. Okay, so if I officially re-headquarter my home office to my new house in Bellingham, my employer might suddenly save up to 2% on my massive tech salary simply because my physical chair is no longer inside Seattle city limits.
Exactly. And while you, the employee, don't pocket that 2% directly, you have to think about the leverage this gives you.
Right.
Making yourself 1% to 2% cheaper for your employer to retain is an incredibly strategic career move, especially in a tightening tech job market where companies are looking for any excuse to trim overhead.
That makes total sense.
You actively remove a layer of financial friction from your own employment file. It creates a subtle, invisible layer of job security.
That is such a fascinating hidden benefit. You are literally making yourself a more cost-effective asset to your company just by moving to a cheaper, prettier city.
Yep.
And speaking of hidden financial benefits, the guide spends some time talking about what it calls a quiet windfall when it comes to daily transportation spending.
This part is huge.
It is. If you move to Bellingham and you are working remotely, you are suddenly avoiding the daily gauntlet of Seattle commuter tolls. If you used to commute across the 520 floating bridge from the east side every day, that expense is gone.
And that adds up fast.
So fast. If you paid for a monthly Sound Transit commuter pass to get downtown, that's gone. If you paid $30 or $40 a day for downtown Seattle parking, that is completely wiped from your budget.
And this is where Schaefer brings in some really compelling anecdotal evidence from his clients. He notes that several of his transplant buyers run the math after their first year in Bellingham and realize that eliminating those daily Seattle commute costs alone essentially offsets a massive chunk of the physical moving expenses.
Oh, I bet.
The cost of hiring the local movers, the packing supplies, the logistical headache, it literally pays for itself within a year just in saved bridge tolls and parking fees.
Which brings us to a really crucial, dangerous pivot point in this guide. Because up until this exact moment in the conversation, we've established that the math heavily, heavily favors Bellingham.
Extremely heavily.
The housing is significantly cheaper. You unlock massive equity. The local property taxes are lower. The sales tax is lower. The daily polls disappear. And you might even make yourself more valuable to your remote employer. It sounds like an absolute utopia.
It does.
But this is where it gets incredibly precarious. Because with all those massive financial incentives dangling in front of them, there is a massive trap waiting for Seattleites.
The trap of the supercommuter.
Yes, the hubris of the supercommuter. Because people look at a map, they see Bellingham is only 90 miles away, and they do this mental gymnastics.
I've seen it happen.
They think, I can do that. I can handle a 90-mile drive. They conjure up this incredibly optimistic analogy in their head. I'll just put on a couple of great podcast deep dives. I'll grab a nice pour over coffee, and I'll just casually cruise down I-5 every morning.
Right. It'll be my me time.
Exactly.
Ah.
I'll keep my amazing, high-paying, in-office Seattle job. I'll get the cheap Bellingham dream house, and I will be the one genius who has the absolute best of both worlds. It sounds like an absolute breeze until you actually try it on a rainy Tuesday in November.
And this section is where Schaffer provides the most brutal, unvarnished honesty in the entire relocation guide. He explicitly asks the central question every prospective buyer asks him. Can you commute from Bellingham to Seattle daily?
And what's his answer?
His answer is incredibly stark. Technically, yes, the road connects the two cities. But in practice, almost no one does it successfully for more than 6 months. He calls it the six-month wall. Buyers hit it, they burn out completely, and their lives basically fall apart.
Let's really paint a visceral picture of the data he provides on this, because the physical reality of the I-5 corridor is deeply sobering.
It really is.
Schaffer lists the absolute best-case scenario, meaning you're driving at 10 a.m., off-peak hours, there are miraculously no accidents through Everett, the weather is totally clear, as 90 minutes one way.
Best case.
Best case. But the typical everyday reality for a rush hour commute is a solid 2 hours. One way, you are spending 4 hours of your limited human life inside a car every single day.
And that is just an average Tuesday.
Yeah.
Then there's the worst case scenario, which happens far more often than people want to admit.
Oh, no.
Friday afternoons, a holiday weekend like Memorial Day or Labor Day, summer weekends when half of King County is heading north to the mountains, the San Juan Islands, or the Canadian border.
Just a parking lot.
In those cases, the Marysville bottleneck completely paralyzes the interstate. That drive easily stretches to 2.5 hours, 3 hours or more. You are looking at a 5 to 6 hour daily round trip.
Wow.
It is completely unsustainable for human health, for marriage, for parenting. It destroys your quality of life.
I am so glad he doesn't sugarcoat that. But part of me still wants to play devil's advocate. What about the alternatives? We don't just have cars. Doesn't the Amtrak Cascades train run that exact route along the water? It's gorgeous.
It does run that route. And the Amtrak Cascades takes about 2 hours from Bellingham to Seattle.
Huh.
It sounds ideal, honestly. You can open your laptop, work on the train, use the Wi-Fi, look at the ocean.
Right. Sounds perfect.
But Schaffer points out the critical, fatal flaw for daily commuters. There are only 2 departures per day in each direction.
Only two.
Only two. It offers absolutely zero schedule flexibility. If your afternoon meeting runs 30 minutes late, you miss the train. If your kid gets sick at school in Bellingham, and you need to leave the Seattle office at noon, you are entirely out of luck. You are trapped in the city.
Okay, train is out. What about flying? Bellingham has an actual international airport, BLI. That's a great little airport. Can't you just hop a quick commuter flight down to SeaTac?
Well, the flight time itself is incredibly short, only about 30 minutes in the air.
See.
But think about the logistics. When you factor in driving to BLI, parking, getting through security, waiting at the gate, boarding, the flight itself, landing at SeaTac, deplaning, and then trying to get from SeaTac all the way up to your actual office desk in downtown Seattle or South Lake Union.
Oh, right. The light rail from SeaTac to South Lake Union is another 45 minutes alone.
Exactly. It takes just as long as driving. It becomes practically useless for routine daily commuting. Plus, the flight schedules are limited and prone to weather delays.
Oh. Okay, so the daily commute is a guaranteed ticket to burnout and misery within 6 months. So who does this move actually fit? If Schaffer has built an 11-year career moving people up there, who are the people successfully pulling this off without losing their minds?
Schaffer synthesizes this down to a very strict, proven set of profiles. First and foremost, fully remote workers.
That makes sense.
This is the vast majority of his clientele, the dominant migration pattern. If you negotiated a permanent, ironclad work-from-home arrangement during the pandemic era, and your HR department lets you keep your Seattle-tier salary while living in Bellingham, this move is a complete slam dunk.
You get the salary of a global tech hub and the cost of living of a regional town.
Precisely.
What about people who have to show their face in the office occasionally? The hybrid folks.
That's the second group that survives. The strictly 1 to 2 day a week hybrid workers. If your company only mandates that you be in the Seattle office on, say, Tuesdays and Thursdays, it is manageable.
Okay.
You can take the Amtrak for those specific days, or you can endure the brutal I-5 drive twice a week, knowing you have the other 5 days to recover. It's a heavy toll, but it won't break you.
The guide also mentions a third group that actually pulls this off, freelancers, consultants, and retirees. And that makes total sense because they dictate their own rush hour.
Exactly.
If you are self-employed and you don't have a mandatory 9 a.m. stand-up meeting in South Lake Union, I-5 isn't your enemy anymore. You can drive down to Seattle for a client lunch at 11 a.m. on a Wednesday and cruise right through Everett.
Right. But Schaefer draws a very hard, unyielding boundary here. He says point blank, if your employer dictates that you need to be physically sitting at a Seattle office desk 3 or more days a week, this move will fail. Do not move to Bellingham.
Wow.
He actively advises those buyers to look at Snohomish County instead, places much closer to the city, like Linwood or Edmonds or Mukilteo.
That is such a crucial piece of professional integrity. He's literally a real estate broker turning away potential high-end clients who want to buy in his market because he knows the six-month wall is undefeated and it's a recipe for misery.
Yeah, he's seen it fail too many times.
And I think it highlights a massive career trade-off that we really need to unpack, because when you accept that you are a remote worker and you are no longer commuting to the city, you are giving something up. You are trading a safety net for a tightrope with a much nicer view.
That is a perfect analogy. You are giving up what urban economists call professional density.
Professional density.
Yeah. Seattle is a massive interconnected hub for cloud computing, biotech, global finance, aerospace. You bump into recruiters at coffee shops.
Totally.
In Bellingham, while the infrastructure is great, the guide notes they have fantastic gigabit fiber internet, perfect for remote work. The local specialized job market is very, very thin.
Who are the big employers up there?
The anchor employers are the regional hospital, Western Washington University, the local city and county government, and a few small specialized manufacturing firms.
Right. It's a completely different economic engine. So you gain 10 to 15 hours a week of free time because you aren't sitting in traffic on I-5. You get your life back. You get to see your kids. You get to walk your dog in the daylight.
Huge benefits.
But you lose the safety net of in-person local networking. If you get caught in a tech layoff from your remote job, you can't just drive down the street in Bellingham and interview at 5 other massive tech giants.
Yeah.
You are fundamentally geographically disconnected from the physical ecosystem of your industry.
It's a calculated risk. When you make this move, you are making a massive bet that your remote status is completely secure, or that your specific skills are so highly sought after that they are transferable in a purely digital, remote-only environment.
And if they aren't?
Because if you lose that remote job and you are forced to find local, specialized, high-paying work within the Bellingham city limits to replace a $200,000 Seattle tech salary, the math we talked about in Section 1 suddenly breaks down entirely.
Yeah.
The local wages simply do not match King County.
Right. The arbitrage only works if you keep the Seattle paycheck.
Okay. So let's assume our listener has the right job profile. They have absolute job security. They are fully remote. They've done the math. They are ready to escape the Seattle pressure cooker.
Sounds good. They are going to be sitting in their new Bellingham house 5 days a week. Now we need to talk about what their daily minute-by-minute reality is actually going to feel like in that house. And this brings us to a fascinating section of the guide. The climate reality.
Yes. The gray reality.
Now, I'm going to play the complete skeptic again here because I think a lot of Seattleites would read this section and roll their eyes. Everyone in the entire world knows the Pacific Northwest rains. It's our entire global reputation.
True.
If I already live in Seattle, if I've been here for a decade, why on earth do I need a relocation guide to warn me about Bellingham's winter? It's just an hour and a half north. It's the same coastline. How different can it possibly be?
It's a very natural reaction because the macro level statistics actually support your skepticism.
Hmm.
Schaefer points out that the annual rain totals between the two cities are incredibly close.
Say.
Bellingham averages about 36 inches of rain a year. Seattle averages about 38 inches. So technically, purely by volume, Bellingham actually gets slightly less rain.
Right. So what is the warning about? Why does he dedicate so much space to this?
Because the difference is entirely qualitative. It's not about the volume of water. It's about how the weather arrives and the psychological weight of it over time.
Okay. Explain that.
Bellingham's rain, due to its specific geography, nestled right up against the Canadian border and the North Cascades, arrives more as a constant, pervasive marine drizzle, usually accompanied by a steady, biting wind coming right off Bellingham Bay.
Oh, that sounds chilly.
Seattle gets more dramatic, heavy downpours that will soak you, but they might break and clear for a few hours. Bellingham gets a settling, inescapable mist. The clouds lower, and they just sit there. And the true test of this is what Schaefer calls the gray stretch from November to February.
The guide has this quote that really stuck with me. It says, "Both cities go gray from November through February. The difference is what you do with it. Which sounds slightly ominous. It implies that the gray up there requires a strategy. But he also brings up this incredible concept of the pre-acclimation advantage.
This is one of the most crucial psychological insights in the entire guide. Schaefer deals with a lot of out-of-state buyers from places like California, Texas, or Phoenix.
Oh, man. They must suffer.
They do. They look at the gorgeous summer photos of Bellingham. They buy a house sight unseen. And then they completely break down during their first November. The unending gray, the 4.15 p.m. sunset, it literally crushes their spirit. But Seattleites have what is essentially a psychological immune system. You are pre-acclimated.
Right. As a Seattleite, I already know what it feels like to go to work in the dark and come home in the dark. I already know the incredible value of vitamin D supplements and buying a sun lamp for my desk. I already own the right expensive Gore-Tex raincoat and the waterproof boots.
Right, you have the armor. Yep. You are going to experience systemic culture shock from the weather. But what Schaefer emphasizes is how the local culture in Bellingham copes with that gray stretch. Because the coping mechanisms are fundamentally different than in Seattle.
How so?
In Seattle, when the gray gets heavy, you can escape into massive indoor infrastructure. You might go to a sprawling indoor mall, or spend a day at a massive multi-level museum, or try a dozen different highly rated restaurants to distract yourself.
You distract yourself with urban consumption. And in Bellingham,
you don't have that scale of urban distraction.
Yeah.
The locals cope by leaning directly into the environment.
Even in the winter.
Especially in the winter. Schaefer notes that Bellingham residents survive the winter through aggressive outdoor recreation regardless of the weather. They head up to ski or snowboard at Mount Baker, which holds the world record for snowfall and is only 90 minutes east of the city.
Oh, that's awesome.
They go mountain biking on Galbraith Mountain, which is a world-class trail system, literally inside the city limits, throwing on mud gear and riding on the days it's relatively dry. Or they pick a dedicated, intensely local indoor practice like, joining a local climbing gym or a pottery studio or a specialized fitness class, and they just lean in.
So you have to be intentional.
Very intentional. You have to actively engage with the smaller scale of the community to beat the winter. You can't just hide in a museum.
But then, according to the guide, comes the payoff. The massive, undeniable reward for enduring months of marine drizzle and wind.
The glorious June to September stretch.
Yes. The guide paints this incredibly idyllic, almost cinematic picture of the summer. The rain stops. You get these incredibly consistent, dry days in the mid-70s.
It's beautiful.
Bellingham Bay, which is freezing in the winter, actually warms up enough to become swimmable. And because Bellingham is situated so far north, it's incredibly close to the 49th parallel, the summer days stretch out endlessly. The sun sets in June, lasts until 9:00 or 10:00 p.m.
It's amazing.
Schaefer writes, this is the stretch that sells the city, and it genuinely delivers. You endure the dark winter because the summer in a compressed coastal mountain town is just spectacular. You can log off your remote job at 5 p.m. and be on a paddleboard in the bay by 5:15.
It creates a very intense cyclical rhythm to the year. Deep hibernation and local focus in the winter, followed by explosive outdoor energy in the summer.
That makes sense.
And you have to be ready to embrace that specific rhythm, which is why when we move into the actual logistics of making this transition, Schaefer outlines a very specific process for Seattleites to test whether they actually want this life.
And this brings us to the tactical playbook. We've talked about the theory. The listener knows the math, they understand the hidden taxes, they respect the ironclad commute rules, and they've accepted the weather. But how do they actually execute the move without making a massive mistake?
Right.
And this is where I was genuinely marveling at the logistics laid out in the guide, because usually a relocation means flying completely blind. If you're moving from Seattle to Austin or Seattle to Denver, you are trying to figure out the nuance of a neighborhood from 1,500 miles away.
It's stressful.
Extremely. You're hoping a 3D Zillow tour isn't cleverly hiding the fact that the house backs up to a loud train track or a busy highway. You're just praying it works out. But here, Schaefer highlights what he calls the 90-minute superpower.
It is a massive strategic advantage that almost no other relocation offers. Because we established that it's the same state, you are utilizing the exact same real estate system.
The NWMLS.
Yes. The Northwest Multiple Listing Service covers both King County and Whatcom County seamlessly. You don't have to learn a new platform, you don't deal with disconnected data, and your Seattle agent can easily refer you to a Bellingham agent who speaks the exact same real estate language. You're using the exact same tools you would use to buy a house in West Seattle.
But it's the physical proximity that really changes the game. The guide outlines a typical 6 to 18 month runway for this move. Buyers don't just impulsively wake up one day and buy a house. They start by setting up their listing alerts, and then they use their weekends to do targeted, low-stakes drive-ups.
And this is where Schaefer advises his clients to be hyper-tactical. Because you are only 90 minutes away, you shouldn't just visit Billingham on a beautiful sunny Saturday at noon when every single neighborhood looks charming and perfect.
Right, that's false advertising.
He tells his clients to stress test the city. Drive up on a Tuesday at 8 a.m. to see what the morning school drop-off traffic is actually like in a specific neighborhood.
Smart.
Drive up on a Friday at 6 p.m. in November to see what the neighborhood vibe is when it's pitch dark, raining, and cold. Do people still walk their dogs? Are the streets well lit? You can physically scout the raw, unvarnished reality of the location before committing a single dollar.
That is brilliant advice. You can literally test drive the bad days of your future life. And over 11 years of facilitating these specific test drives, Schaefer has actually tracked the data and mapped out exactly where different demographics of Seattleites tend to land in Bellingham.
It's really revealing data.
It's fascinating to look at. It's like people are subconsciously trying to find the Bellingham translation of their exact Seattle neighborhood.
It's completely true. People seek out the same cultural vibe and architectural feel they are used to, just at a different scale. Let's look at his demographic map.
Okay, lay it out for me.
If you are a transplant, coming from Capitol Hill or Ballard or Wallingford areas, known for being highly walkable, dense, with lots of early 1900s craftsman homes, independent coffee shops, and an urban energy, you are going to naturally gravitate toward Bellingham neighborhoods like Columbia, the Lettered Streets, or Sahom.
Makes total sense.
They offer that exact same indie, walkable energy. You can walk from a historic home right to a local brewery.
Okay, what about the premium established view neighborhoods? If someone is coming from Queen Anne or Magnolia, where do they go?
They look south of downtown. They look to Fairhaven, Edgemoor, or South Hill. These are the highly established premium residential areas in Bellingham.
Right. Big trees, nice views.
Exactly. They feature sweeping, elevated views of Bellingham Bay, incredibly mature tree canopies, and high-end classic properties. It is a direct one-to-one translation of the quiet, wealthy Magnolia vibe.
And what about the families, the folks moving from West Seattle or the tech families coming from the newer developments on the east side?
They almost always head north and east to areas like Cordata, Berkeley, or Birchwood.
Why there?
These areas feature much newer construction. They have a distinctly more suburban feel with cul-de-sacs, larger garages, and lower maintenance yards. And critically, they are situated around highly rated, walkable elementary schools and massive trail networks. It's built perfectly for family logistics and ease of living.
It's amazing how predictable human migration can be when you break it down by lifestyle priorities. People want what they know, just cheaper and quieter. But regardless of which neighborhood they choose, whether it's the historic Lettered Streets or suburban Berkeley, every single transplant from Seattle is facing a universal set of final trade-offs, the ultimate what you gain versus what you give up ledger.
And if you are genuinely considering this move, it is vital to look at this ledger with completely clear eyes. Let's start with the gains because they are substantial and life-altering.
Let's hear them.
You gain genuine silence at night. As Schaefer notes, Seattle ambient sound, the hum of I-5, the sirens, the port is constant. Bellingham, outside of the immediate downtown core, is genuinely quiet.
That sounds lovely.
You also gain a compressed geography. You have deep powder skiing at Mount Baker, sailing on Bellingham Bay, and world-class mountain biking on Galbraith, all right there. They are accessible within minutes or an hour, not a massive, exhausting, traffic-filled day trip.
And for parents, you gain massive stability in the school system. The guide points out a huge logistical difference. Bellingham Public Schools has about 11,000 students total, compared to Seattle Public Schools, which manages a sprawling district of around 50,000 students.
It's a huge difference in scale.
And Bellingham's district has historically been much more stable, better funded locally, with less of the capacity volatility, school closure threats, and administrative whiplash that Seattle parents often have to navigate year after year.
Those are incredibly powerful gains for your day-to-day quality of life. But the column of what you give up is equally real, and it hurts for some people.
Yeah, you have to be honest about it.
You are giving up major restaurant variety.
Mm-hmm.
Bellingham has very good food, a great farm-to-table scene, but it is not Seattle.
Yeah.
You won't find five different regions of authentic regional Chinese cuisine within a 2-mile radius.
No. Definitely not.
You're giving up major league sports. There are no Seahawks, no Mariners, no Kraken right down the street.
You're giving up the massive cultural institutions, too. The Seattle Symphony, the Pacific Northwest Ballet, the massive traveling Broadway shows at the Paramount, the sprawling museums. Bellingham has wonderful, smaller, scaled-down community versions of these things, but not the deep, world-class variety you get in a global city.
That's true.
And practically speaking, you are giving up the sheer convenience of SeaTac's international flights. If you want to fly direct to Tokyo or London, you are driving 2 hours south to Seattle before your vacation even begins.
Yeah, your travel days just got a lot longer.
So we have journeyed through a massive amount of data and lifestyle reality today. We started with the financial spreadsheet, looking at how selling a home in King County can unlock hundreds of thousands of dollars in equity, acting as a structural cheat code that can literally fund an early retirement or buy a second home outright.
We navigated the hidden layered tax picture too, realizing that escaping Seattle's stacking local levies and the corporate implications of the jumpstart payroll tax creates a very real, quiet financial advantage, even in a state with no income tax.
We confronted the brutal, unforgiving reality of the six-month commute wall on I-5, confirming that this move is a beautiful haven for fully remote workers, but an absolute trap for anyone who deludes themselves into thinking they can maintain a desk in Seattle 3 days a week.
And we embrace the concept of the pre-acclimated advantage, knowing that Seattleites already have the psychological immune system to survive the Pacific Northwest marine drizzle in order to earn those spectacular 9.30 p.m. June sunsets.
And we learned how to use the 90-minute superpower to be incredibly tactical. Driving up on a dark November Friday to scout neighborhoods like Fairhaven, Columbia, and Cordata, finding the exact right architectural and cultural fit without ever having to fly blind.
Right.
We've laid out the entire ledger. And while the financial math is, frankly, often a total slam dunk, the lifestyle trade-off is deeply, deeply personal. It requires absolute honesty about what you, the listener, value most in your daily life.
Which brings us to a final, slightly provocative thought drawn directly from the subtler human details of Schaffer's Guide. Throughout this entire deep dive, we've focused heavily on the tangible, measurable metrics. The exact dollar amounts of equity, the specific commute minutes, the inches of rain, the square footage.
Yeah, the spreadsheet stuff.
But Schaffer notes a psychological shift that happens when you make this move, one that you can't put on a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Bellingham forces a transition from bigger city anonymity to a genuine small town reality.
Oh, that's interesting.
He explicitly warns that the dating and social scene for singles is significantly thinner.
Yeah.
And he uses a very specific haunting phrase. He says you have to get used to a reality where you'll see your dentist at the grocery store.
Oh, wow. That perfectly encapsulates it. It's charming, but it's also slightly terrifying if you aren't used to it.
It raises a profound question for anyone contemplating this move. We spend so much time calculating the financial cost of a relocation, optimizing our equity unlock, and minimizing our local tax burden. But what is the psychological cost of shrinking your world?
Right.
Are you truly ready to trade the comforting invisibility of a massive metro where you can be whoever you want, blend into the crowd, make mistakes, and never see the same stranger twice for a city where everybody knows your face? Are you genuinely ready to be known by your community?
That is the real leap of faith, isn't it? We started this conversation by talking about how an hour and a half drive felt like a calculated, easy administrative step. The state stays the same. The NWMLS stays the same. The numbers are clean. The equity unlock is highly visible.
But the human element is different.
Exactly. The human element, the social density, the loss of anonymity, the profound quiet of the nights. That's the murky, unmapped landscape you actually have to navigate. The math absolutely works. But only you can decide if the scale of the life actually fits who you want to be.